Part 2 Chapter 19 Margarita. Follow me, reader. Who told you there is no true, faithful, eternal love in this world? May the liar's filthy tongue be cut off. Follow me, my reader, and me alone, and I will show you such love. No. The master was mistaken when, at the hour that night rolled over midnight, he bitterly told Ivan at the hospital that she had forgotten him. That could never have happened. She had certainly not forgotten him. Firstly, let us reveal the secret that the master chose not to reveal to Ivan. The name of his beloved was Margarita Nikolaevna. Everything the master had told the poor poet about her had been absolutely true. He described his beloved accurately. She was beautiful and intelligent. Moreover, one may confidently add that many women would have given anything to trade their lives for hers. Childless, the 30-year-old Margarita was married to a prominent scientist, one who had made a discovery of great national importance. Her husband was young, handsome, kind, honest, and adored his wife. Margarita Nikolaevna and her husband occupied the entire top floor of a wonderful mansion, situated in a garden on one of the side streets near the Arbat. An enchanting place. Anyone can ascertain this by visiting the garden. Just ask, and I will give the address and show the way. The house stands even now. Margarita Nikolaevna had no want of money. Margarita Nikolaevna could buy anything she liked. Among her husband's friends were some very interesting people. Margarita Nikolaevna never touched a primer stove. Margarita Nikolaevna did not know the horrors of living in a communal apartment. In other words, she was happy? Not for a single moment. From the day when, at age 19, she got married and moved into the house, she knew no happiness. Oh, gods, ye gods of mine! What did this woman need? What did she need, whose eyes flickered perpetually with a mysterious little fire? What did she need, that witch with an ever-so-slight cast in one eye, who adorned herself with mimosas that spring? I know not. It has not been revealed to me. Evidently she spoke the truth when she said she needed the master. Not the Gothic mansion, or the private garden, or the money. She loved him. She spoke the truth. Even the heart of this truthful narrator, a complete stranger, twinges at the thought of what Margarita had to endure when she came to the master's house the following day. Fortunately, before she could talk to her husband, who had not returned in time, and discovered that the master was gone. She did everything she could to find out what happened to him, and of course found out nothing. Then she returned to the house and began to live there as before. Yes, 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 the very same mistake, Margarita told herself on those winter days as she sat by the furnace and gazed into the fire. Why did I leave him alone that night? Why? It was madness. I came the next day, true to my word, but it was too late. Yes, just like the miserable Matthew Levi, I returned all too late. Her words were absurd, of course, for really, what would have changed had she stayed at the master's that night? Could she have saved him? Ridiculous, we might exclaim, but we will not do so for the sake of this despairing woman. Thus, Margarita Nikolaevna suffered all winter. And then came spring. On the day of bizarre mayhem caused by the appearance of the black magician in Moscow, on the Friday when Berlioz's uncle was banished back to Kiev, when the bookkeeper was arrested, and when numerous other silly and inexplicable things occurred, Margarita awoke around noon in her bedroom, with bay windows in the mansion's tower. After waking up, Margarita did not start to cry, as was often the case, for she had woken with the premonition that something would finally happen that day. Sensing this premonition, She began to warm and nurture it in her soul, afraid that it would leave her. "I have faith," Margarita whispered solemnly. "I have faith. Something will happen. It cannot be otherwise. For after all, what have I done to earn lifelong suffering? I confess that I lied and deceived and led a secret life concealed from all. But surely no punishment could be that cruel. Something will definitely happen because nothing can drag on forever. Furthermore, my dream was prophetic, I know it." Thus whispered Margarita Nikolaevna, as she stared at the crimson curtains swelling with the sun, dressed anxiously and brushed her short, curled hair in front of the triple mirror. The dream that visited Margarita that night was indeed unusual. The thing was that she never dreamt of the master during her winter torments. At night he would leave her, and she would only suffer in the daylight hours. But now he came into her dreams. Margarita dreamt of an unknown place, a hopeless, dismal location under the overcast sky of early spring. She dreamt of this sky, tattered, fleeting, and grey, with a silent flock of rooks circling above, a crooked little bridge, a muddy springtime creek underneath, mirthless, miserable, half-naked trees, a solitary aspen, and beyond, amid the trees, a tiny log cabin. Perhaps a kitchen house or a bathhouse or hell knows what, all of it so lifeless and despondent, it made you want to go and hang yourself on that aspen by the bridge. Not a breath of wind, not a movement in the clouds, not a single living soul. A hellish place for a living man. And then, imagine, the door of the log cabin flings open, and he appears. He is rather far away, but clearly visible. He looks scruffy. It's hard to tell what he's wearing. His hair is tousled, his face unshaven. His eyes are sick, disturbed. He beckons with his hand, calling her. Gasping in the lifeless air, Margarita runs towards him over the hummocks, and then she wakes up. The dream can only mean one of two things, Margarita Nikolaevna reasoned. If he is dead and beckoned me, then it means he has come for me, and I will soon die. That is very good, because then the suffering will end. Otherwise, he is alive, and the dream can only mean that he is reminding me of himself. He wants to tell me we will see each other yet. Yes, we will see each other very soon. Still in an excited state, Margarita finished dressing and began to convince herself that everything was indeed coming together very nicely, and that one should learn to seize and get the most out of such inspired moments. Her husband was away on business for 3 whole days. For 3 days she was her own woman, with nothing to stop her from thinking whatever she wanted, dreaming of whatever she liked. All 5 rooms on the top floor of the house were completely at her disposal. An entire apartment that would have been the envy of tens of thousands in Moscow. However, upon gaining 3 whole days of freedom, Margarita chose by far not the best place in the luxurious apartment. After having tea, she went into a dark, windowless room, full of suitcases and assorted old junk stored in 2 large cabinets. Squatting down, she opened the bottom drawer of one, and extracted her only valuable possession in life from underneath a heap of silk scraps. A brown leather album appeared in Margarita's hands, containing the master's photograph, a bank book for the account holding 10,000 rubles in his name, the dry petals of a rose pressed between pieces of rice paper, and part of a single notebook of typed manuscript, its bottom edge singed by flames. Returning to her bedroom with this treasure, Margarita Nikolaevna positioned the photograph on her triple mirror and sat there for about an hour with the burned notebook on her lap, turning its pages and rereading the text that, after the fire, had neither beginning nor end. Darkness descending from the Mediterranean Sea engulfed the city so hated by the procurator. Gone were the suspended bridges connecting the temple to the fearsome Antonia Tower. Down came the void and flooded the winged gods over the Hippodrome, the Hasmonean Palace with its loopholes, the markets, the caravanserais, the alleys, the pools. Gone was Yerushalayim, the great city, gone as though it had never existed. Margarita wanted to read on, but there was nothing further but the uneven, charred fringe. Wiping away her tears, Margarita Nikolaevna put down the notebook, placed her elbows on the dressing table, and sat there for a long time opposite her own reflection in the mirror, without taking her eyes off the photograph. Then her tears dried. Margarita carefully collected her possessions, and several minutes later they again lay buried under the silk scraps, and the lock in the dark room clanged shut. Margarita Nikolaevna put on her coat in the hall, intending to go for a walk. Her housekeeper, the beautiful Natasha, inquired as to what she should prepare for dinner, and, after being told it did not matter, began to chat with her mistress about God knows what so as to amuse herself. Yesterday, for instance, a magician awed the audience in a theatre with his tricks, then handed out 2 bottles of imported perfume and some hosiery to everyone, free. And then, after the séance ended and the public went outside, bam, everyone ended up naked. Margarita Nikolaevna collapsed onto the chair by the mirror and burst out laughing. Natasha, you ought to be ashamed, Margarita Nikolaevna said. You're a smart, literate girl. Hell knows how they lie in those store lines, and you go around spreading that nonsense. Natasha's face flushed red, and she insisted with great passion that she was telling the truth, and that she had personally seen a lady come into a grocery on the Arbat wearing shoes which disappeared from her feet as she was paying at the register, leaving her in stockings, eyes bulging, a hole in the heel of her stockings, and the shoes were magical from that very séance. And she just went off like that. Just like that, Natasha exclaimed, growing even redder from the fact that her story had not been believed. Why, last night, Margarita Nikolaevna, the police must have arrested 100 people. The ladies from that séance ran around Tverskaya in nothing but their underwear. These are Daria's stories, of course, said Margarita Nikolaevna. I've long been noticing what a horrible liar she is. The amusing conversation ended in a pleasant surprise for Natasha. Margarita Nikolaevna went into the bedroom and emerged carrying a pair of stockings and a bottle of cologne. Explaining that she also wished to perform a magic trick, Margarita Nikolaevna gave Natasha both the stockings and the bottle, adding that she asked for only one thing in return, that Natasha not run round Svetskaya in nothing but her stockings, and that she no longer listened to Daria. Kissing each other, the mistress and the maid parted. Leaning back in the trolley's soft, comfortable seat, Margarita Nikolaevna rode down the Arbat, sometimes thinking her own thoughts, sometimes listening to the 2 men whispering in the seat in front of her. The 2 were whispering about some nonsense, glancing round cautiously from time to time to make sure no one could hear. Sitting by the window, a large, meaty man with animated, porcine eyes was quietly telling his smaller neighbour that it became necessary to cover the coffin with a black shroud. It can't be, the little man whispered in astonishment. It's unbelievable. So what did Zildebin do? Through the steady hum of the trolley, words came from the window seat. Criminal investigation. Scandal. It's practically supernatural. From these fragments, Margarita Nikolaevna managed to assemble something coherent. The 2 were whispering about how some deceased man, though they would not say who, had his head stolen from his coffin that morning. This was what had this Zeldebin character so worried. The men whispering on the trolley also appeared to have some connection to the deceased victim of robbery. Will we have enough time to pick up flowers? The little man fretted. The cremation is at 2, you say? Finally, Margarita Nikolaevna had had enough of this mysterious gossip about the stolen head, and was glad to discover that her stop had been reached. Several minutes later, Margarita Nikolaevna was sitting on one of the benches beneath the Kremlin wall, in a spot that afforded her a view of the Manège. Margarita squinted at the bright sun, recalling last night's dream, remembering how, exactly a year ago, to the day and hour, she had been sitting on this very bench next to him. Her black handbag lay beside her on the bench, just as it had then. He was not present today, but Margarita spoke to him in her thoughts all the same. "If you have been exiled, why won't you let me know? People do send word after all. Do you no longer love me?" "No. For some reason I cannot believe that." "Perhaps you died in exile. If so, I beg you to release me, to give me the freedom to live and breathe at last." Margarita Nikolaevna replied for him herself. "You are free. Am I keeping you?" And then she countered, "What kind of answer is that? No. Leave my memories, and then I will be free." People passed by Margarita Nikolaevna. A man glanced sidelong at the well-dressed woman, attracted by her beauty and solitude. He coughed and sat down at the end of Margarita's bench. Gathering courage, he spoke. "The weather's decidedly good today." But Margarita gave him such a grim look that he rose and walked away. "Here's a perfect example," Margarita said silently to him who possessed her. "Why did I chase that man away? I'm bored, and there's nothing truly bad about that Don Juan, except perhaps that silly word, decidedly. Why do I sit alone under this wall, like an owl? Why am I excluded from life?" She grew utterly sad and disheartened. But then, the same wave of anticipation and excitement that she had felt in the morning pushed her in the chest. "Yes, something will happen." The wave pushed her again, and she realized that it was a wave of sound. Growing more distinct, the beat of approaching drums penetrated the city hum, accompanied by the slightly off-key sounds of brass instruments. A mounted policeman appeared first, riding by the garden fence, followed by three other policemen on foot. Then came a slow-moving truck bearing the musicians. Further, a brand-new open hearse, with a wreath-covered coffin upon it, and four people standing at the corners of its platform, three men and a woman. Even at a great distance, Margarita could see that the faces of the people accompanying the deceased on his final journey in the hearse bore odd expressions of confusion. This was particularly obvious with regard to the woman standing in the rear left corner of the platform. Her fat cheeks looked like they were being even further inflated by a juicy secret on the tip of her tongue. Mysterious little flames danced in her puffy eyes. It seemed that any moment now the woman would lose it, wink at the deceased and say, "Have you ever seen anything like this? It's practically supernatural." A crowd of mourners, some 300 strong, walked slowly behind the hearse with equally confused looks. Margarita followed the procession with her eyes and listened to the dreary sounds of the Turkish drum fading in the distance with the same repetitive boom, boom, boom. What a strange funeral, she thought. And how depressing all those booms. Oh, I would truly sell my soul to the devil to find out if he is alive or not. It would be interesting to know, though, who it is they are burying with such odd faces.
"Berlioz, Mikhail Alexandrovich," came a slightly nasal voice from nearby. "The chairman of Masolit."
Surprised, Margarita Nikolaevna turned and saw a gentleman who had apparently managed to slip quietly onto the bench while Margarita had been distracted by the procession. Evidently she had absent-mindedly asked her last question out loud. Meanwhile, the procession slowed down, probably delayed by a traffic light.
"Yes," the unknown man continued. "Funny mood they're in, ferrying a dead man, and all they can think about is where his head went."
"What head?" Margarita asked, peering at her unexpected neighbour.
He turned out to be a short man with flaming red hair and a fang. He wore a starched shirt, a quality striped suit, patent leather shoes, and a bowler. He had a flashy tie. His breast pocket was of particular interest. Where men usually keep a handkerchief or a pen, this particular gentleman had a bare chicken bone sticking out.
"Well, you see," the redhead explained, "this morning someone stole the head of the deceased right out of the coffin in the Griboyedov Hall."
"How can that be?" Margarita asked reflexively, even as she recalled the whispers on the trolley.
"Hell knows how," the redhead replied insolently.
"Though I suspect it wouldn't hurt to ask Behemoth. Awfully clean theft. Monstrous scandal. And most importantly, no one can figure out what anyone could want with this head."
Though deep in her own thoughts, Margarita Nikolaevna was nonetheless amazed by the stranger's bizarre lies.
"Hold on," she exclaimed suddenly. "Which Berlioz? Is this what the paper's today?"
"But of course, of course."
"So then these must be writers following the coffin?"
Margarita asked, baring her teeth suddenly.
"Well, naturally."
"And would you recognise them by their faces?"
"Every single one,"
the redhead replied.
"Tell me," said Margarita, and her voice turned hollow. "Is there a critic by the name of Latunsky among them?"
"How can there not be?" the redhead replied. "There he is, in the fourth row on the edge."
"The blonde one?"
Margarita asked, squinting.
"Ash-coloured hair. See how he raises his eyes to the heavens?"
"Looks like a priest."
"Bingo."
Margarita had no further questions and peered at Latunsky.
"I see you really hate this Latunsky,"
said the redhead, smiling.
"I hate a few others too," Margarita said through her teeth. "But it's not that interesting a subject."
Meanwhile, the procession began to move on, a chain of mostly empty cars following those on foot.
"Indeed, nothing interesting about it, Margarita Nikolaevna."
"You know me?"
Margarita asked, surprised. Instead of answering, the red-headed man removed his bowler and held it to the side. "A real bandit's face," thought Margarita, studying her random visitor.
"Well, I don't know you," she said dryly.
"How could you? Anyhow, I've been sent to discuss a certain matter with you."
Margarita grew pale and drew back.
"That's what you should have started with," she spoke. "No need to spew hell knows what about a severed head. You are here to arrest me?"
"Nothing of the sort,"
the redhead exclaimed.
"What's this? If I am talking to you, I must be here to arrest you. I simply have some business to discuss with you."
"I don't understand. What business?"
The red-headed man glanced round and said mysteriously,
"I was sent to give you an invitation for tonight."
"What are you rambling about? What invitation?"
"From a very wealthy foreigner,"
the redhead said meaningfully, narrowing his eyes. Margarita became incensed.
"Now here's something new. A street pimp," she said, rising to leave.
"Some errand this is. Thanks for nothing,"
exclaimed the redhead, offended, and growled after Margarita.
"Dunce!" "Bastard," she replied, turning her head, and immediately heard the voice of the red-headed man behind her.
"Darkness descending from the Mediterranean Sea engulfed the city so hated by the procurator. Gone were the suspended bridges connecting the temple to the fearsome Antonia Tower. Gone was Yerushalayim, the great city, gone as though it had never existed. And you can get lost as well with your charred notebook and your dried-up rose. Keep sitting here alone on the bench, begging him to grant you freedom, to let you breathe, to leave your memory."
Turning white, Margarita returned to the bench. The red-headed man stared at her through the slits of his eyes.
"I don't understand," Margarita Nikolaevna said quietly. "It's possible to find out about the notebook, to infiltrate, to spy. Has Natasha been bought? Is that it? But how could you know my thoughts?"
She frowned miserably and added,
Tell me who you are. Which bureau are you from?
What a bore, grumbled the redhead, and then spoke louder. Forgive me, but I've already told you I am not from any bureau. Sit down, please.
Margarita obeyed unquestioningly, but as she sat down, she could not help asking again, Who are you?
Oh, all right, my name is Azazello, not that it will tell you anything.
Will you tell me how you found out about the manuscript and my thoughts?
I will not,
Azazello replied dryly. But do you know anything about him? Margarita whispered imploringly.
Well, let's say I do.
I beg you, just tell me if he's alive. Don't torture me.
Well, all right. He's alive, he's alive,
Azazello replied reluctantly. Oh, God!
Please, no fussing or screaming,
Azazello said, frowning. Forgive me, muttered a newly obedient Margarita. I was angry with you, of course, but you must agree, when someone on the street invites a woman to visit someone, I have no prejudices, I assure you. Margarita smirked uneasily. But I never see any foreigners. I have no desire to interact with them. And besides, my husband... The drama of my life is that I live with a man I don't love, but I consider ruining his life unworthy. I've had nothing from him but kindness. Azazello took in the incoherent speech with noticeable boredom and said sternly,
I'll ask you to be quiet for a moment.
Margarita humbly fell silent.
The foreigner I'm inviting you to visit is completely harmless, and not a soul will know of your visit. That much I can vouch for.
What does he want with me? Margarita asked insinuatingly.
You will find out later.
I see. I am to give myself to him, Margarita said pensively. Azazello smirked contemptuously at this and answered,
Any woman in the world would dream of it, I assure you.
Azazello's mouth twisted in a sneer.
But I must disappoint you. It will not happen.
What sort of foreigner is this? Margarita exclaimed in utter confusion, so loudly that the passers-by turned to look at her. And why should I be interested in seeing him? Azazello leaned towards her and whispered meaningfully,
Well, there's a lot in it for you. You'll seize the opportunity.
What? Margarita exclaimed, and her eyes widened. If I understand you correctly, you are hinting that I could find out what happened to him. Azazello nodded silently. Let's go, Margarita exclaimed forcefully, grabbing Azazello by the arm. Anywhere you say. Azazello heaved a sigh of relief and leaned back on the bench, his back obscuring the large letters of the name Niura that had been carved into the wood.
Tough crowd, these women.
He stuck his hands in his pockets and stretched out his legs far in front of him.
Why did they send me, for instance? Behemoth should have gone. He's got charm.
Margarita spoke, a crooked, wretched smile on her face. Would you stop mystifying and tormenting me with your riddles? I am a miserable person, after all, and you are taking advantage of it. Here I am, about to get into some questionable escapade, but I swear only because you have enticed me with news of him. My head is spinning from all these conundrums.
Spare me the drama, Azazello replied, grimacing. Consider my situation as well. Beat up some manager, or kick someone's uncle out of his apartment, or shoot somebody, or some other trifle like that. That's right in my field. But talking to a woman in love? My humble thanks, but no thanks. I've been trying to coax you into this for a good half hour now. So are you coming, or not?
I am, Margarita Nikolaevna replied simply.
In that case, please be so kind as to accept this,
Azazello said. Extracting a small, round, gold box from his pocket, he handed it to Margarita with the words,
Hide it already, people are looking. You can use it, Margarita Nikolaevna. You've aged quite a bit in the past few months from all your grief.
Margarita flushed but said nothing while Azazello continued.
Tonight, at exactly 9:30... kindly strip naked and rub this ointment all over your face and your body. Afterwards, do what you want, but stay by the telephone. At 10, I will call you and tell you all you need to know. You needn't worry about a thing. You'll be delivered where you need to go without any hassle. Understood?
Margarita was silent for a moment and then said, Understood. This box is solid gold. I can tell by its weight. Very well, then. I see I am being bribed and drawn into some shady business which I will dearly regret.
What's this now?
Azazello all but hissed.
Again?
No, hold on.
Give back the cream.
Margarita gripped the box tighter in her hand and continued, No, hold on. I know what I'm getting into, but I'm doing it all for him, for I have no other hope in the world. But I want to tell you that if you should lead me to my demise, you'll be ashamed. Yes, ashamed. I will have perished for love. And striking herself on the chest, Margarita glanced at the sun.
Give it back,
Azazello hissed angrily.
Give it back. To hell with this. Let Behemoth do this.
Oh, no, Margarita exclaimed, to the amazement of nearby pedestrians. I agree to everything. Agree to perform this entire farce with the ointment. Agree to go to the depths of hell if need be. I won't give it back.
Bah!
Azazello shrieked suddenly, popping his eyes out of the garden fence, and began pointing at something with his finger. Margarita turned to look where Azazello was pointing, but saw nothing of interest. Then she turned back to Azazello, wishing to receive an explanation for this odd bah, but there was no one around to give it. Margarita Nikolaevna's mysterious visitor had vanished. Margarita quickly checked her handbag, where she had previously hidden the little box, and made sure it was still there. Then, without pausing to think, she hurried away from the Alexandrovsky Gardens.